Another huge hit from 1963, My Boyfriend's Back, a huge hit single for the Angels, an American girl group. It was originally recorded as a demo and intended to be released or recorded by the Shirelles, but it ended up being released as recorded by the Angels. And it spent 3 weeks at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart and number two on the R&B Billboard. My Boyfriend's Back by the Angels, as we're featuring some of the hits from 1963, of course, as we commemorate the 51st anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, November 22nd, 1963. Hey, keep it right here on Coast to Coast AM later tonight when George Knapp, the intrepid one, welcomes Area 51 whistleblower Bob Lazar. This is an appointment tune, to be sure. I can't wait. And when we come back, we're going to delve into one of the 1960s most fascinating characters, Cary Wendell Thornley. He was a writer, a philosopher, once described as a Zen dishwasher, an enlightened prankster, possibly even an Oswald double, with disturbing ties to the Kennedy assassination. In 1959, Cary Thornley served in the Marines with Lee Harvey Oswald and was actually writing a novel based on Oswald 3 years before JFK's assassination. These connections would later cause New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison to suspect that Thornley was one of the notorious Oswald doubles and part of a JFK assassination plot. Initially, Thornley denied these allegations, but later came to believe that he'd been used as an unwitting pawn in a conspiracy that ran far deeper than the JFK assassination and may have also included the RFK and MLK assassinations, as well as the disturbing specter of government-sponsored mind control. My conversation with author Adam Goldrightly as he unpacks and reveals the real Cary Wendell Thornley, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Adam Goldrightly has been chronicling fringe culture in an illuminating manner for over two decades. An active contributor to the zine revolution of the late 80s and early 90s, Adam's byline was a familiar sight in many cutting-edge magazines. His articles have appeared in numerous publications such as The Excluded Middle, UFO Magazine, Paranormal, and Steam Shovel Press. He's the author of four books, including The Prankster and the Conspiracy, The Story of Ken Thornley and How He Met Oswald and Inspired the Counterculture, and Caught in the Crossfire, Cary Thornley, Lee Oswald, and the Garrison Investigation. Adam Goldrightly, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Richard. Good to talk to you again.
Yes, pleasure, pleasure. Listen, give us some insights into who Cary Wendell Thornley was before he met Oswald in 1959.
Yeah, Thornley was born in Southern California in the conservative enclave of Orange County in Whittier there in 1938. And he's a pretty extroverted, wild character growing up in that environment. And his first claim to fame, which at first blush doesn't seem to have anything to do with the Kennedy assassination, but maybe it did, his first claim to fame was starting a spoof, quote-unquote, spoof religion with his friend Gregory Hill in a bowling alley there in Whittier in 1958. The religion they dubbed Discordianism, based on the worship of the Greek goddess of chaos and discord, Eris. Now, you know, this was basically a spoof religion. Some have described it as a complicated joke disguised as a religion. Others have described it as a religion disguised as a joke. Maybe it's a little bit of both, but that's Thornley's first claim to fame, and that was basically just an in-joke between him and his friend Greg Hill. Over the years, the Discordian Society would evolve and become an influence on the counterculture, such as books like the Illuminatus Trilogy by Robert Anton Wilson. So that's where we start with Thornley. In 1959, he joined the Marines, and during his basic training at El Toro Marine Base there in Southern California, he met none other than Lee Harvey Oswald, and he was fascinated by Oswald. Oswald was willing to discuss, you know, different topics Thornley was interested in, like Marxist ideology of all things, and different politics and religions. And they knew each other for the, you know, over the course of a couple months. Then Thornley left and was shipped over to Japan at Atsugi Base, where Oswald had previously been stationed. On his trip over there, he started writing a book, a fiction book called Idle Warriors. And the main character in that book was based on Thornley and other Marines he had known, as well as Lee Harvey Oswald. When Thornley got over to Japan, he heard that Oswald defected, and at that point, the main character became based primarily on Oswald. So that's the next curiosity, that he was writing a book about Oswald 3 years before the Kennedy assassination.
Sure, which is how he would end up, you know, gaining the attention of the Warren Commission and the FBI. They knew that he had written this book. But let's go back to the El Toro base in Santa Ana, California, where he met Oswald, 1959. And as you say, it's kind of interesting. Oswald was a radar specialist stationed at Atsugi. He came back to the States at El Toro and met Thornley there. Now, what was Thornley's impression of Oswald? Was did he believe that Oswald was, in fact, a communist?
I think he didn't necessarily believe he was a communist, but, you know, he did indeed have interest in Marxism and discussing that. And Thornley as well had, you know, an interest in Marxism. At that point, Thornley didn't see him as someone who would eventually, you know, be motivated by communist ideology to the point where he'd, you know, go as far as killing a president. At that time, he just considered, you know, his conversations with Oswald as a kind of a mutual interest in political ideologies, one of them being Marxism.
Although Thornley claimed that Oswald subscribed to Pravda, would often speak in sort of an exaggerated Russian accent, and you know, was constantly making allusions to, you know, to the revolution and you know, Orwell's 1984.
It seemed to be done in a tongue-in-cheek manner, so I don't think Thornley took it all that serious at that point. He did indeed subscribe to Pravda, and that came out from other witnesses. And so, you know, it was pretty curious. He came back to the States under a kind of a cloud of scandal. He got in trouble over Japan and came back with the rank of private, which was odd because most of the enlisted guys coming back were at least at the rank of corporals. So he had gotten in trouble over there. But if you look closely at the records of Oswald, it appears what he was involved with over in Atsugi was doing intelligence agency work, and this you know, coming back supposedly in trouble with the brass all, that was just a cover, and that it's what I suspect, and it makes a lot of sense if you look at all the various documentation connecting Oswald to intelligence, is that Oswald came back to El Toro to basically be a spy in that unit and check up on other people, you know, because they had the, you know, their radar technicians. And so there was a certain amount of security clearance they had. And so that Oswald openly initiated these discussions about Marxism and presented this image raises a curious eyebrow with folks, you know. And Thornley was certainly someone who would come up on the radar because he was this wild kind of extroverted character who was very intelligent. And so we know the history of Oswald afterwards, that he defected to Russia, which once again indicates to a lot of folks that he was on some sort of intelligence mission.
Isn't it in Oswald's record that he contracted gonorrhea, but in the line of duty? In other words, how one manages to do that, I'm not sure. But explain, why would that be in his record? Contracted gonorrhea, a sexually transmitted disease, in the line of duty?
Yeah, we produced that document in the book. While he was at Atsugi, Japan, Oswald, of course, he was working, as we mentioned before, as a radar technician. This was during the whole U-2 spy plane period. And Oswald often visited off hours a certain bar there, and met with some curious individuals. One was an Eurasian lady who many suspected was a spy for the Russians. And so, of course, Oswald was having sex with this woman, some of the other B-girls there at the at this bar, and he contracted gonorrhea. And so what's that mean in the documentation, in the line of duty? Most people suspect that, yeah, he was going in there to feed disinformation to this, she was called a beautiful Eurasian lady who worked in this bar in Japan there. And so that's where the document seems to indicate that he was on an intelligence mission during this period.
And when Thornley met Oswald at El Toro Marine Base in Santa Ana, California, did they hit it off? Were they close friends?
Thornley described them as acquaintances, but Thornley had a hunger for conversation and meeting colorful people. And once again, they only knew each other for a couple months, but that was enough, you know, of an acquaintance that it left an impression of Oswald that he was indeed a fascinating character, fascinating enough that he would end up writing two books about him.
And they had a falling out while they were both stationed at El Toro, is that right?
Yeah, Oswald actually formally made a comment at one point, and he meant it tongue-in-cheek to Oswald. They were engaged in some type of activity, and Oswald had made some comment, and Thornley fired back, "Well, come the revolution, you'll take care of all that, Lee." Thornley meant it tongue-in-cheek, but Oswald seemed wounded by that comment, and that basically ended their friendship. And a short time afterwards, Thornley was shipped over to Japan.
And Thornley claimed, I believe until the day he died in 1998, that was the last time he ever spoke with or saw Lee Harvey Oswald. Is that correct?
You are correct. Although other witnesses claimed during the Garrison investigation that Oswald and Thornley were seen together in New Orleans in 1961.
Tell us a little bit about Thornley's book, The Idle Warriors, which, as you say, started out as sort of the character in the book, starts out as kind of an amalgam of Thornley himself, Oswald, and some others that were stationed at El Toro. But after he found out that Oswald had defected to the Soviet Union, Oswald became really the basis of the character. Tell us a little bit more about that book and how closely it parrots Oswald's life.
Yeah, the book was intended initially, you know, this was during the Cold War era, to talk about the malaise that ran within the troops there during that period. And as far as the accuracy of the depiction of Oswald, it, you know, once again, Thornley only knew him a couple months. So, you know, it's a very kind of rough, still composite character, but once again, based on Oswald and what, you know, how this malaise would basically motivate somebody to leave behind the U.S. and defect to Russia.
Now, going back to Thornley's insistence that he never met or that he never saw Oswald again after 1959, it seems rather curious that both Oswald and Thornley would end up in New Orleans shortly before the assassination in 1963. What brought Cary Thornley to New Orleans?
After he got out of the Marines, this was in 61, he was living in Southern California there and kind of bored with what was going on there. He was an aspiring writer, so that motivated him to move to the French Quarter, where there was all kinds of colorful characters and activities going on. So that was, you know, Thornley's main motivation for moving there. And during that period, he met some very shadowy characters that would later lead him to suspect that he'd been unwittingly manipulated into a JFK assassination conspiracy in the same manner that Oswald theoretically had been manipulated by a lot of those shadowy characters there we saw in the movie by Oliver Stone, JFK. Go ahead, Richard.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, let's talk about the some of these shady characters that Thornley ended up rubbing elbows with.
Yeah, their names were Gary Kirsten and Slim Brooks. And these guys claimed to have connections with the mob, and they'd worked with intelligence agencies, perhaps involved with the Bay of Pigs. You know, there was that nexus of intrigue going on there in New Orleans. And they'd have a lot of freewheeling conversations, much like he had had with Oswald. You know, Thornley, once again, this larger-than-life character who liked to discuss all kinds of things, and somehow the conversation came around to how to kill a president, Kerry. How would we kill a president? And in particular, JFK. At the time, Thornley considered this nothing more than a theoretical discussion, although somewhat morbid. Later, these conversations would come back to haunt Thornley.
Well, I mean, either Thornley is just the most unluckiest man in history, you know, be the wrong place at the wrong time, or there's more to this story than he was, you know, revealing publicly. What do you think? I mean, who was Kerry Thornley? Was he, in fact, a witting participant in the assassination, or was he a patsy?
Well, I suspect unwitting in that he was a patsy, much in the same way that Oswald was. And if the Oswald setup hadn't gone down and they needed a fallback patsy, their man was Thornley. Now, you know, during that period he was in New Orleans, he seemed to have all these chance brief encounters with all of these characters that Jim Garrison associated with the assassination, David Ferry, Clay Shaw, Guy Bannister. All of these people were seen to be placed in Thornley's path there when he was in New Orleans. Once again, they were brief encounters, but by the time we got around to the Garrison investigation in 67, you know, it started to look as if, you know, why were you meeting with all these characters, Thornley? You know, and Kerry was confused, as the rest of them began to suspect, you know, this is more than mere coincidence. Something definitely odd was going in here. Call it bad luck, crazy coincidences, or, as Garrison suspected, was Thornley some type of CIA agent? In 67, Thornley was indicted by Garrison, and Garrison claimed that he was, yes, a CIA agent. He was one of the notorious Oswald doubles, and that he was writing his book, The Idle Warriors, about Oswald as a means to set him up in advance of the assassination. Once again, Thornley denied all these accusations, and a witness came forward at that time by Barbara Reed claiming that she had seen Thornley and Oswald together. This was in September of 63 at the Bourbon House restaurant. Thornley, once again, he denied these allegations, but all of these coincidence, chance encounters, and now this witness testimony put Thornley smack dab in Garrison's crosshairs for the next few years.
Well, before we get into how Thornley sort of became known to Jim Garrison, the New Orleans district attorney, how likely do you think it is that Thornley never met up with Oswald in New Orleans? Given that they were sort of traveling in the same circles, it almost seems impossible that Thornley didn't meet up with Oswald in New Orleans.
It would on the face of it, as far as the time period, they basically had a couple months where they could have met up in New Orleans. And this is where it gets into Oswald doubles and the work of other researchers, one of whom is John Armstrong, who's done an amazing amount of work looking at the discrepancies in the Warren Commission testimony. And, you know, Armstrong basically came up with the theory, which is a pretty sound theory if you look at all his thousands of citations for his book called Harvey and Lee, that there were two separate Oswalds. And when I discussed this with Armstrong a year ago or so, he was basically of the conclusion that who Thornley met with was one of the Oswald doubles.
All right, we'll pick up on that point, Adam, when we continue our conversation. Caught in the Crossfire, Kerry Thornley, Lee Oswald, and the Garrison Investigation by Adam Gorightly, right here on Coast to Coast. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM, and bringing us back in, another monster hit from 1963, a top 10 single on the Billboard Hot 100 from that year, It's All Right, recorded by The Impressions. And written by the group's lead singer, Curtis Mayfield, no less, who went on, of course, to have an illustrious career as a recording artist all on his own. More of my conversation with Adam Gorightly as we discuss a very interesting individual, to say the least, Kerry Thornley, a riddle wrapped in a mystery, dipped in a chocolatey coating. Back with more here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett with you. Adam Gorightly on the line, author of Caught in the Crossfire, Kerry Thornley, Lee Oswald, and the Garrison Investigation. You point out, Adam, that in his book, The Second Oswald, Dr. Richard Popkin recounts a number of apparent Oswald impersonators observed in New Orleans and Dallas prior to JFK's assassination. And, of course, researchers have long suspected these imposters were perhaps creating a false history to portray Oswald as a communist agitator. But when I look at pictures of Kerry Thornley, I don't think he looks anything like Oswald. How did Thornley become suspected of being an Oswald double?
One of the reasons Garrison suspected this was because of some of Thornley's travels during 1963, seemed to end up in a lot of the same places that Oswald was, not only New Orleans, but during that time he took a trip back to California and passed through Dallas at a period where Oswald's, the apartment where he lived was unoccupied. Oswald had moved to New Orleans, and Garrison suspected that it was Thornley who staged that famous photo, you know, of Oswald standing there with a rifle and some communist literature in his hand, the same photo that appears to have been doctored, and Oswald claims that was the situation with that photo. And you know, Garrison kind of just went down that rabbit hole and was putting things together, propinquities, he called it, Thornley being in the you know, the perfect position to pull off some of this stuff. Thornley, you know, he went to California during this period and on his way back traveled through Mexico close to the time that Oswald, or somebody saying they were Oswald, was also in Mexico. So all of this raised a curious eyebrow, but as far as being a double, a lot of that information, that theory, came from a researcher by the name of Harold Weisberg, who was an independent researcher who was working in New Orleans and got into a bit of an adversarial relationship with Thornley. And it's as documented in my books from newspaper articles and some other sources, Weisberg had some photos of Thornley touched up by a California artist, and it was these photos that Weisberg was taking around and showing to different witnesses and asking them if they had seen this individual at, you know, this such and such date or whatever. And so that muddies the water, and I think is a lot of the reason that this Thornley being Oswald double got inserted to the Garrison investigation story. I don't think there's necessarily anything into it, but certainly Harold Weisberg was promoting this theory.
Well, it seems, though, you know, you have these touched up photos, as you say. It seems like Garrison was really maybe working hard to fit a round peg into a square hole, or a square peg into a round hole with Thornley. I mean, did Garrison have a vendetta against Thornley?
Well, he did, at least from Thornley's perspective. And once again, this is documented with a lot of source materials. I was passed on a lot of Thornley's papers, and Thornley got involved with all of this, you know, the Garrison investigation. It really started with an investigator by the name of David Lifton, who met Thornley in 65. Thornley had written a book about Oswald. It was one of those quick tabloid books where Thornley basically presented what the Warren Commission was presenting during that period, that Oswald had been motivated, you know, because of his communist leanings to assassinate Kennedy. It was just a quickie book. Thornley was trying to become an established author. In 65, he met with David Lifton, who took, you know, was adverse to what Thornley was presenting. Lifton brought all the copies of the Warren Commission report, all 26 volumes, over to Thornley's house, laid them out one night like a bunch of puzzle pieces. And by the end of the evening, he convinced Thornley that, you know, the Kennedy assassination was a conspiracy and that Oswald was not guilty. And so during, we didn't talk much about Thornley testifying before the Warren Commission, but during his testimony, he had mentioned an incident there at El Toro where Oswald was talking to one of the other Marines in Russian, and Thornley indicated he thought it might have been one of the Marines there by the name of Heindel. And so when Lifton heard this, he thought, Heindel. And Heidel was the name that Oswald used as a cover. What's going on here? There might be something to this. Lifton discovered that this Heindel guy was now living in New Orleans during that same period. And so what Garrison wanted to do was bring Heindel before the grand jury, ask him if he had spoke to Oswald in Russian. And Garrison suspected that Heindel would deny this. He'd already denied it to him during a interview he'd done with Heindel. When this gets pretty convoluted, but when Heindel denied this before the grand jury, then he would call Thornley in to testify, and Thornley would say, "No, I did hear him speak in Russian to Oswald." Anyway, Thornley, when he heard this was the scenario that Oswald wanted to present, wanted no part of it, that he wasn't really sure that Heindel had spoken to Oswald in Russian. And so this basically caused a rift between Garrison and Thornley. Not long afterwards, Thornley suddenly becomes one of the lead suspects in the case. So he turned from witness to suspect over a short period of time. And so you could jump to that conclusion, and Thornley certainly thought that is that it was some type of vendetta on the part of Garrison.
But weren't Garrison's investigators? They had a photograph of Thornley and his wife Kara, and they were showing that to people and promoting the idea that the woman in the photograph wasn't Thornley's wife, but was in fact Marina Oswald, sort of suggesting that Thornley and Marina were romantically linked.
Mm-hmm. And that's information Thornley got from a Los Angeles Free Press investigator who had visited Garrison's office, and they showed this photo. Once again, it was out of a Tampa Tribune photo during that period of Thornley and his wife, Karen. They were claiming, once again, according to Thornley's sources, that it was Marina he was with. And so, once again, that was another allegation that they basically put on Thornley, that he was not only involved with New Orleans, with Oswald in New Orleans, but he was also carrying on an affair with Oswald's wife during this period, Marina.
Did Thornley actually meet Clay Shaw, as Garrison alleged?
Thornley admitted meeting Clay Shaw, but once again, this was just a brief encounter, and it happened with Thornley's landlord knew Clay Shaw. And so the landlord said he had an interest in Thornley's book, The Idle Warriors. Thornley loaned that to this landlord, and when he did that, at that meeting, he met this briefly with Clay Shaw. Really didn't know who he was at that time. But once again, this brings up the specter of Why were all these people thrown in Thornley's path? Was there some greater design behind, what was going down in New Orleans during this period in regards to Thornley and Oswald?
You mentioned his book, Oswald, that he wrote in 1965. And in the book, Thornley offers, his opinion that Oswald, just as the Warren Commission suggested, or their findings, Oswald was the lone gunman. He acted alone. There was no conspiracy. Why would Thornley write such a book? I mean, did he honestly believe that? Because he certainly did a 180 later.
Mm-hmm. I think he did honestly believe it. Once again, remember, he was a young man ambitious to be a writer. That's one of the reasons he appeared before the Warren Commission. He basically put himself in a position, let it be known that he wanted to speak before the Warren Commission, basically as a tool to promote the book he was working on, The Idle Warriors. Then the opportunity arose after he spoke before the Warren Commission to turn out one of these tabloid-type books, a quickie paperback that would show up in supermarkets and such back in the day. So he did that. He took that on. And basically, he was basing his impressions on his short time he had known Oswald, but basically the popular media slant, which a lot of people were, accepting of during this period. This is 64 or 65, that Oswald was indeed guilty of those crimes. And once again, Thornley did a quick about face after he was presented with more evidence that was critical of the Warren Commission by David Lifton about a year or so later.
And what happened to Thornley, I guess, after the 1960s, because he lived up until 1998.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's when it starts getting even more convoluted and weirder, Richard. In the early 70s, around 1973, he came across some information in a book called Coup d'Etat in America by A.J. Weberman and Michael Canfield. And Coup d'Etat in America was an acronym for the CIA, the CIA's involvement in the Kennedy assassination. And in that book, they presented the photos of those three notorious tramps that were picked up in Daly Plaza, as well as some photo overlays of the Watergate burglars, including E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis. And what they were presenting in this book was that the Watergate burglars were, at least a couple of them, were the two of the three tramps. And once again, you have these photo overlays, and one of them was of E. Howard Hunt, the legendary spook. When you place that overlay over the old man tramp, the features matched up exactly. And so what they were contending in the book, that it was indeed Howard Hunt that was one of the mystery tramps in Daly Plaza. And he does indeed, the resemblance is pretty uncanny, although the old man tramp looks 10 years older or so than Hunt, but Hunt was known as a master of disguise. When Thornley saw this photo of Hunt, it clicked in, and he remembered that shadowy character he had met in New Orleans in 1961 by the name of Gary Kirsten, and he went, wow, Hunt, that's the same guy I met who was going by the name of Kirsten. And of course, this blew his mind. And because of this, Thornley started having a bunch of other recovered memories that he indeed was manipulated during that period in New Orleans to be an unwitting participant in this JFK assassination conspiracy.
As you say, it is very strange that all of these characters, the Clay Shaws, the Howard E. Howard Hunts, being thrown in Thornley's path, as he is seems to be, following the same path as Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh,
he was being set up. He was being set up.
Yeah. And as time progressed, Thornley's theories about his role became even more complex and curious. One thing he suspected, that he had been manipulated via MK-Ultra mind control, and that, as it turns out, Thornley served at Atsugi Base in Japan, as we mentioned before, as did Oswald, and he also served in the in Manila in the Philippines, and this was the main storehouse for all the LSD that the CIA was using during that period in their, when they were testing it on the troops. And so it appears that both Oswald and Thornley were used in this MKUltra experimentation. There's other sources I cite in the book documenting this. Curiously enough, E. Howard Hunt served at Otsugi during that same period.
You know, the thing that's interesting about Thornley is he didn't help his own cause. I mean, he almost seemed to encourage, in his writings, encourage this kind of this wild speculation about his involvement in some of these, I don't know, nefarious groups like the Bavarian Illuminati and so forth. He was his own worst enemy in that regard.
Yeah, and that began as a joke initially. And that's where we get into the Discordian Society. You know, it started as just, as I said, an in-joke between a couple of friends. As time evolved, other writers got involved in this and people in New Orleans, and it kind of grew as a joke religion, a way to play pranks on people. One of the guys that got involved was none other than Robert Anton Wilson. And during the course of the Garrison investigation, Garrison had these different independent investigators who showed up there in New Orleans and came up with their own various theories. And one of them was a fellow named Alan Chapman, who appears had some sympathies with the John Birch Society. Anyway, Chapman claimed that the Bavarian Illuminati was behind the assassination. When Thornley caught wind of this, he thought it was hilarious, and just to prank Garrison and other investigators, he basically came up with some Bavarian Illuminati stationery and came up with his own Bavarian Illuminati name, Omar Khayyam Ravenhurst, and launched in cahoots with Robert Anton Wilson and some other folks what they called Operation Mind Screw. I won't say the real word there, but sanitize it.
We got you.
Audience.
Yes, thank you for that.
And and so started feeding stories where he was saying, yes, I, Omar Khayyam Ravenhurst, I am a member of the Illuminati, and, you know, we're here in New Orleans, but we weren't involved in the JFK assassination. We've just come to illuminate you. These type of pranks, of course. Garrison, once again, he had that adversarial relationship with Thornley and didn't think it was all that funny, and began to suspect that maybe the Discordian Society was some type of CIA front.
Do you think that that Garrison's vendetta against Thornley tarnished Garrison's reputation, and maybe that was the whole point, to discredit Garrison?
Well, you know, that's entirely possible, and I, you know, one thing Garrison said, the reason why his investigation ultimately was unsuccessful in, you know, bringing, indicting and finding Clay Shaw guilty of a crime, because Garrison claimed there was CIA interference that undermined his investigation, and that there were plants and different people involved that undermined what he was doing, and you know, was the reason that he was ultimately unsuccessful.
Yeah, Thornley kind of fell off the radar after, you know, Garrison and those investigations in the 1970s, and then I guess in part because of you, I mean, there was a resurgence in interest in Kerry Thornley. Why was that, do you suppose? Why did people become interested in Kerry Thornley again?
You know, he's such a fascinating character, and there's been, you know, there've been all these stories about him over the years, you know, within the subculture of JFK assassination research that basically scratched the surface, you know, and just repeated a lot of the things that Garrison had said without really digging deep. And I had the opportunity, you know, I became interested in this character just because he was interesting on so many levels, and during the course of the research, I came across a lot of the original source materials related to the case and Thornley's documents. And I think I'm one of the persons responsible. Also, a author by the name of Sandra London was working with Thornley in the early 90s as well, and arranged an appearance on the current Current Affair, that tabloid news magazine show. So, you know, Thornley got once again, you know, people started talking about him, and the I think the interest has obviously continued, at least from my standpoint. And I'm also in Liverpool at the moment, talking at the Cosmic Trigger play and conference here. And one of the characters in the stage play is none other than Kerry Thornley.
There you go. Adam Gorightly, appreciate our conversation. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks, Richard. I appreciate it.
Caught in the crossfire. Kerry Thornley, Lee Oswald, and the Garrison Investigation. When we come back, James DiEugenio, co-editor of The Assassinations, a book on the deaths of JFK, MLK, Robert Kennedy, and Malcolm X. My name is Richard Serrett. You're listening to Coast to Coast.